that. I just couldn't hear you. Okay, the Honorable Mr. Neal will chair your hearing at this time, sir.
Okay, good morning, sir. Can you hear me right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you, for the record, state your full name and your family's name, sir?
Yes, sir. My name is Walter Thomas Hutton. EOC number 049560.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Agency this morning in regards to the possible forum. When you introduce the board members that are going to conduct the hearing today, to my left is the Honorable Richard Ennis. To my right is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman. To his right is the Honorable Dale Rittenhouse. And to her right is the Honorable Michael Johnson. My name is Bailey Miller, and I'll be the panel chair today. Pardon, sir?
No, I said good morning, sir.
Oh, okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
thank you. Good morning to you, too, sir. I have a hearing problem, and some of these phones reverberate, and it makes it hard to understand. Okay, sir, I'm going to go over a summary of about you and the operations committee and what's been going on with you while you've been incarcerated and while you've been released. So as a resident, I'm just going to verify with you if the information is correct. By the way, you remember, we're given a packet of information, and we don't always have food and groceries and things like that. So, Mr. Hutton is 62 years old, and he is serving a life sentence for manslaughter. He's 27 at the time of the offense, and he has served 34 years on this sentence. And Mr. Hutton became parole eligible on December 9, 2007, and he was certified for this hearing on June 1st, 2016, with a letter of parole, home arrest, or after the discharge. Mr. Hutton has appeared before the board 14 times, and on July 27, 2007, he was granted home arrest. Then on March 20, 2008, Mr. Hutton was granted veteran parole. On March 11, 2009, he had a revocation hearing, but was not revoked then. On September 26, 2011, his parole was revoked. Excuse me. That was okay. It wasn't revoked in 2011. And his parole was revoked March 20th, 2012. Parole was granted. I'm sorry. Can't read my own notes. It is September 26, 2011, the parole was revoked. The first time, the first year he had it was. Then March 20th, 2012, parole was granted, but it was revoked on January 30th, 2013 for absconding and drug use. Mr. Hutton was denied at his hearings until August 4th, 2016, when the place their trust in him again, and granted Mr. Hutton letter of parole. 10 months later, on June 8th, 2017, that parole was revoked for misdemeanor and changing his residence without permission. This hearing is to consider reinstatement of Mr. Hutton's parole from the violation in June last year. Now, he has a long list of discipline violations for drug disobeying and some theft and assaulting behavior. While incarcerated waiting for this hearing, Mr. Hutton was caught with alcohol which had been made in the prison. And that was in May of last year. Mr. Hutton has completed considerable programming and has been released planned, but all of the information is from the 2015 hearing. There was nothing new for this one other than they say they were meeting the CCC parole office in Tucson to participate in the IBS program. And this would enable them to get a better support system going. And that's an intervention to his plans for education and employment and stuff that he submitted in 2015. I didn't find any new support or opposition letters. And I don't know of any budget not in there to, for Mr. Hutton anyway, and the most important is here, so. Now, does that sound pretty correct up to that point, sir?
Well, it's totally possible, except having the alcohol use in the Deputy Warden, I had appealed the ticket, the Deputy Warden dropped the ticket with the incident for manufacturing and possession of proof because it wasn't mine. I was in a cell with another inmate, and he dropped the food chamber, and I told him to get it out of there, and it wouldn't. So I had gotten out of the couple of each other while I was living here.
Okay. The information I had written for didn't say anything about somebody else's that he was carrying a box with
Mr. Neal, the record does show it was reversed. So the Ames shows it was reversed.
Okay.
So.
Well, I understand, and I apologize, sir. So, now let's go on. Okay, the fence was December 10th, 1982. You had an altercation with the victim and subsequently stabbed him several times, and he died later at the hospital. You were charged with secondary murder, but a grand jury indicted you for first degree murder, and that was not before the court. But it was ruled that the first degree would be charged with the incident to court on, so thus you went to trial for first degree murder. You were convicted manslaughter by a jury, and I guess the jury couldn't come to a consensus on first or second degree murder, and the inclusion of all the lesser included charges in first degree murder, they were able to, or allowed to, find you guilty of manslaughter. You were sentenced to life, which is super excessive for manslaughter. However, the sentence was determined based on the fact that you were on probation at the time of the offense, and your prior record, those two things were paramount in determining the length of the sentence. And the biggest thing they looked at is that you want to release someone from California for that. So, now it's time for you to kind of get to know the board on your hearing last year. I think I was just before I started moving in. Anyway, we'd like to get to know you a little better. Maybe tell us about what was going on when the offense was committed originally. What was going on with you and your life, and tell us a little bit about the offense. And then from there, it'll be your chance to give us all the information we need to make a determination whether to return it to parole or to deny that. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir. You want to talk about what happened in the middle of the offense?
Right. And, it's the offense that put you in prison, it's like the sentencing and everything. I'm not familiar with it, but we always like to hear it from the perspective of the offender.
Okay. I'm originally here in Tucson, Arizona. And I had left, I I think it was some type of possession charge or burglary charge, and the judge who would sentence me to a drug program in California. That's the reason why I went to California. I went to California to the drug program. I completed the program. I was working there as a counselor, and then I eventually came back to Tucson. I was in Tucson for like 2 weeks, and then my brother's girlfriend called me up, and she found out that I was here in Tucson. She asked me if I wanted to go out one night, and I said, sure, we'll go out, but I don't have any money. She said, don't worry about it, I got the money. We'll just go out and do some. And Tucson back in the 70s, they used to have a lot of bars and stuff here in Tucson downtown. So she said we could go to the there and play pool. And that's what we did until 1 o'clock. And that's when the bars closed. And then she told me, she said, Walter, there's a place over on Target 30 that's an after-hour place. She said, we can go over there and we can play dance or play pool or whatever we want to do. And I said, well, you sure you can do this? Because she was my brother's girlfriend. And she said, no problem, her name was Sophia Powell. So when we moved to this place over here on Park and Zerio, and we were out there dancing for a while, having some fun and stuff, and drinking a little bit. And then I think she got a little bit over-intoxicated, and she passed out on the floor. So I had to pick her up and take her outside to her car, which was the station wagon that she was driving. And I put her in the passenger seat. She says, why don't you please drive me home? And I said, no problem. And while I was walking around to go into the driver's side, this man, which was the victim, came from behind the car with a knife, and he told me, give me your money, give me your on your jewelry. I told him, no, I was a little bit, I had been drinking a little bit, and I wasn't fully intoxicated, but I wasn't, been drinking. And I told him, well, I'm going to give you money. And he punched at me with the knife. So there was a scuffle, and I knocked the knife out of his hand, and I was able to pick it up, and I stabbed him, I reckon, like 3 or 4 times. And when I had dropped the knife after I stabbed him, and I looked up, it was a police car pulling up to where I was, and I turned around and I ran. They arrested me a half a mile down the street, and they took the victim to the hospital where he unfortunately died. And that's when they charged me with first-degree murder. But when I went to trial, I was in county jail for 3.5 years, and I went to trial, and the jury found me guilty of manslaughter. But they gave me a life sentence because of the 1978 law, the mandatory sentencing law, which if you commit a violent crime on prolonged probation and work release, you can receive a life sentence. And that's the reason why I received a life sentence.
Okay, sir. This person was the victim of the riot and attacked you. Had you seen him previously in the after hours bar?
I can't remember. I might have seen him, but like I didn't know who he was. I mean, it was just me and my brother's girlfriend dancing and having a good time and stuff. And he could have been in there. I don't know. I wasn't really paying no attention to him.
Okay, sir. So currently in August of 2016, you became a full board, then ran for Florida. Then you managed to go 10 months, and you were violated again. And it's so it's fatal because you failed to supply a murder specimen, and because you changed your place of residence without prior approval of your assigned parole officer. So, and then they apparently had trouble finding you for a while. So what happened, sir, after that trip? short of time, though, why didn't you supply a specimen?
Well, sir, well, on March 22nd, they called me for the UA. I eventually found out 3 months of one of us. But on March 21st, I went to my parole officer's office for my monthly scheduled visit. And he told me, he says, from January to February, Mr. Lutton, he said, they haven't called me for a UA. Do you know why? And I said, no, sir, I don't know why. So he says, well, just a minute, I'm going to get on the computer. And I'm going to find out and try to see what's going on with your UA. And he told me, he says, oh my God, he says, I asked him what happened. He says, for some reason, or somehow, somebody took your name out of the list. And he said that, I don't know how this could happen. He says, well, I can remove your name and your code, which is out. And he did. He got on the computer. He says, help me. He said, give me a couple of days. He says, for your name and code to go through. This was on March 21st. And he said that they should be calling me before you go. But I had explained to him prior to that that someone had stolen my phone. And I didn't have no communication because I had a bottom phone. And you know, those people on the corners, they signed up for the bottom phone. And then the same day that I got the bottom phone, someone stole from the bus station or the bus stop. And so when I told my parole officer about it, I said, sir, you can call my number and see that someone else will be answering my number. And he did. He called the number, and I guess the guy who stole my phone answered my phone, and he started telling me, I'm in the parole officer, who's on the parole officer at the parole office. I'm in the district office, parole officer, and the guy hung up. So my parole officer knew that I didn't have a phone at the time. And then on January 22nd, I worked for daily. I go to the day labor at 4:30 or 5:00 in the morning, and you have to because you have to try to get there as early as you can because they call the five or six people that were first out there. So I got there like 4:45, almost five o'clock in the morning. And they called me for work. I went and worked at a construction site for this company. And when I came back about 3, they paid me at the daily place. And then I knew I had to call to see what they called me for anyway, so I went and tried to find a telephone. And I couldn't find a telephone nowhere. I'm about 6 months in each direction, six blocks in each direction looking for a telephone, and I couldn't find it. I went to my little brother's house, and I asked him, can I use your phone so I can call my code call? See, they called me for my code call, and unfortunately, he couldn't let me use his phone because he said, well, we got less than a minute on this phone, it's going to take longer than that. I went to my sister's house, and she was in there asleep. My mother's sister, Sheree, hung around, and she was in her sleep. Unfortunately, she passed away in June. June 20th was 17. And it's not like I'm trying to make any excuses, so, but I know that it was my responsibility to make sure that I called that number, and I did.
Okay, well, it seemed that he'd been having some problems even before those 2 months from Western got any raise.
Yes, it is.
You know, you were arguing for Confederates on October 25th, 16, but the BOEC conditions have not been signed yet, so we wait for what you pass on that. Then, looks like it was sample in December, and then in December, probably for the Federal Meetings, and GCMS was requesting confirmation for methamphetamine. So it looks like there's been some progression in your behavior when you got on board last time, and it also says in the report that you moved in January of 2017 without consent, and then on 3/31, everybody that was in that apartment moved out, and you were wrong with them, and you didn't have permission to. So there was more than one movement without permission, and there were drug problems, and more than one missed UA. So,
here's where I'm a recovering addict, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. And it seems like when I have started having problems on the outside, still going to work. I was going to AA and was still meeting with and talking to somebody to try to seek for help. I know he turned to alcohol and drugs. That's
what I mean. It's obviously record that you're not going to even put the names and stuff.
Yes, sir. I've been going on for over a year. And I know that I have a responsibility when I'm out there. I know that I can't drink or use any drugs. I've been clean and I've been doing AA and AA, and I've been really trying to clean up my act as far as me using my clean drugs and alcohol. But I do need professional help.
Okay, so we don't disagree with the fact that, that you need some assistance and everything. That's part of that thing. The first day going on the parole, when she was doing drugs and missing UAs and moving around getting permission, and that's not the first time that you've had parole revoked, sir. So can you explain to me what kind of, how I can be assured if I was to vote to return to parole? Can you tell myself and the board what it is, what's changed in you, what's going on with you, that we should be able to trust you not to go out and follow the pattern you've been following ever since your first parole?
Yes, sir, I can explain this, so I can always tell the truth. I know I have a drug and alcohol problem, but I know that there's places or programs here in Tucson, especially the one at SACRAC, that my parole officer tried to enroll me in, but he went to notify his supervisor. His supervisor came out and told me, he says, Mr. Burton, due to the fact that you are under special conditions from the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, he said the only way we can enroll you into our program, he said, by you having a life sentence, and by sex offenders and child molesters are also at the program. He said the only way that you can go to this program is that the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency has to recommend or order you to go. He says, other than that, Mr. Hunter, you cannot get into this program. Which, that's what I mean. I believe because the program is ran by AUPOC, Arizona Department of Corrections, but it's at the parole office. And I truly believe that if I had that type of supervision over me, and we go into the programs and groups and group therapy classes that I'm supposed to go to, it's a 3-month and 6-month program, and the only way I can come out of the program is if I graduate from the program. And by the way, from the Arizona Board, from the Arizona Department of Correction is the one who runs the program. I truly believe that if I had a chance to go to this program, through orders on recommendation, then I believe that I would have a better chance of making a better person out of myself to help me to curb me from using drugs and alcohol. I realize I can't be drugs and alcohol. I live in Atlantic Coast, and I'm 62 years old, so this is no place for me. I've done my time, I've been up to 34 or 36 years in this. This was 36 years I've been in and out of this prison. I'm tired of this, man. There was times I didn't have thoughts of doing something to myself, but I said, no, I can't do that. I have to stay strong for my wife, for my sister who just passed away in June 20th or 17th. And I have to do good for my victim, because by the world running the world, I cannot get out of this and just continue to do bad on the world. I'm asking the board today that if I can have the board to recommend or only to go to this program, I truly believe that my chances of being the greatest success would be more if I had a chance to go to this program. I can't go to my parole officer who's going to be involved in this program. But his supervisor says, no, you can't, because you're under special conditions from the board of executive agency. He says, the only way you can go there is the force of information to the board. But I believe if I do have an opportunity or a chance to go to this program, I truly believe that I will be a success. And I don't have to, as long as I have a supervision of the Department of Corrections over my head, I truly believe that I will be more of a success than a failure if the board wants to be done.
Okay, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. First of all, we can't require a specific program. We can suggest if we go to the legal inmate, but that doesn't mean that we will do it. I've never heard that any programs on your outside are denied because you're a lifer versus somebody with a short sentence. That's part of the deal with parole, is trying to get you rehabilitated, which you need to do things to make possibility of an absolute discharge. But anyway, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time.
Yes.
Okay, sir, we're nearing the end of your hearing, and we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. We do ask that you don't repeat the information that you've already given to us, but give us anything you think might be pertinent for help us make a decision here in a few minutes, okay?
Yes, sir. Sir, I just want the board come to understand that I'm a drug addict and I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've been going to classes here in the prison. I have my certificates and I have my certificate for the 12-step program. I am trying to rehabilitate myself. It's not like I won't be in prison. I really don't, because I have family, I have children, and I have grandchildren, and I have great grandchildren that I was able to meet and see when I got out this time. I made a mistake. I take full responsibility for my actions. I should have been more conscious of making that phone call than I did when I was out there. But I'm sorry, and I went back to C.T. White. He granted me release the last time when I came from the board. And I just want to apologize to him and the board members that I made a mistake. But I know that I can't continue to make the mistakes. I have to change my life. I'm 62 years old. I don't have too much far to go as far as life is concerned, but I do want to be a part of my children and my grandchildren's life. And I just hope that the board can reconsider releasing me back into the community. I am not a bad person. I mean, I've been out four times. I have not committed a crime. I have been in contact with the police only one time out of the 11 years that I made my first parole board. I'm not prone to commit steal from people. I don't have no intentions in my heart to do that. I'm too old for that. And I just want to be able to go out and spend what's left of my time with my family and try to do, try to get into a program to do better for myself, to make sure that I will try to stay away from drugs and alcohol, because it's not only, this is a disease. And I have this disease, and I have to try to do what's best for me. And I just hope the board can see that by me being in prison, it helps, because I don't do drugs or drink here in prison. But it's just, I'm wasting my time, I'm wasting my life here in this prison. And I can be more productive if I'm able to go back into society.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. The board will be holding a discussion to make a determination. We ask that you stay on the phone and listen to our discussion. And when we're done, we'll get back to you and we'll finalize this, okay?
Yes, sir.
The board is now in discussion. One thought I can sympathize with Mr. Hutton and his fight with drugs and alcohol and that, but in 7 years span, he was paroled and overbooked 3 times, and continued drug use. I just don't think, 10 months after he was paroled and got in trouble, and I don't think that showed as much initiative in trying to stay out and learn yourself and try to rehabilitation. So at this point in time, I wouldn't be in favor of remaining Mr. Hutton for or home minister after the discharge, but I'm willing to listen to discussion from any of my fellow board members. Okay, well, I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. Hutton regular parole, home arrest, or after the discharge.
Second.
Agreed.
Agreed. Okay, Mr. Hutton, the board has voted to deny you regular parole after the discharge or home arrest at this time. And we really got keep working on evasion problems, and I think most jobs now have availability for AA and NA sessions.
But what's your opinion? I'm using typewriters, a lot of programs that I can't use.
Well, sir, there's a lot of programs that you want to take as a driver, since you have been out on parole, it's been my experience to see that once you become parole-eligible, that some of those classes, like re-entry classes and stuff, become available. So it's part of the usual discipline that can make a difference in what they'll change to anyway. But my understanding is that the Alcoholics Anonymous and the Narcotics Anonymous are available to pretty much everybody because they don't want you addicted while you're even as a lifer. They don't want you addicted to drugs in there, and that's the only way to help you. But that's an issue that they help with your CO3 and the Department of Corrections. We have voted to deny the regular home arrest or after discharge at this time. So this will end your hearing.
Sir, not yet. Oh. Got to do a couple more. Oh, well, you got to do at least one, but do you want to consider overruling this at all?
We can find those two in the jury.
Yeah.
We can't do one of your own. We need two reasons.
All right. But now you got to do one now. Why are you denying?
Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Okay. The reasons for your denial, sir. In the third violence case, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury.
You said
I already previously, Sir? Well, and I will continue my previous probation for history of continuing substance abuse.
Thank you.